truth be told, it's like I've always liked Google because Google was always had like the most potential upside. They were cheaper. Azure was amazing too. They were coming up, but AWS was just so good. I was like, they're like bullies, man, because they're so good and they know it. And they would just, like you're saying, like they would just tell you, this is what we're gonna do, and they would do it, and they did. We'll go.
Yeah, 3, 2, 1. Okay. We are live for the first ever episode of the Wolf Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to perform deep dives into secular growth themes for the next decade and spotlight those hidden gems that might become mini monsters. So obviously the first theme we're going to cover on this pod is what I believe is the biggest tech revolution of this decade, maybe multiple decades, AI. So of course we're going to bring on two guests that are experts within this field, Stock Talk and Paper Gain. So Stock Talk, tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, so I am a full-time trader and investor. I've been doing that for, it's going to be a little over 11 years now. I was originally in medical school, a place called Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. A lot of Indian kids my age go to medical school. You know, that's just what we do. In my third year, I just kind of came to the point of just being in love with finance and being in love with companies and stocks. And so I decided to take that leap and go to try to be a full-time trader. And thankfully, it worked out. And, you know, here we are many, many years later. And I still love markets and companies and anything about the microeconomy. I love it. And I found it fascinating. So, happy to be here and happy to talk about stocks anytime. So I think this is a terrific slot to do that.
What about you, Paper?
Nice, man. Appreciate you inviting me also, by the way, and love being on with Stock Talk. We go back and forth all the time. But full-time trader as well and investor. But my background, I think, you know, I live in Silicon Valley and my background is enterprise technology for, the better part of a decade. So before transitioning to trading and investing full time, this was my career, right? So coming from this space, I think, you know, part of my personal transition was the companies that I invest in today and that I trade today, they're all in this space. And, you know, it was kind of like, I don't want to, all kind of unfair being able to come from the home of a lot of these companies and know who's actually growing faster than who's got the bleeding edge tech before anybody else knew, because I was helping build these companies from the ground up. Like we literally set up Uber, like we literally built Robinhood, literally built Snowflake. And you know, all the way back to Dropbox, if you know what, like, not that anybody really uses that anymore, sorry, but yeah, that's my background. And, the original data scientist that coined the term data scientist, like those are like my core crew in Silicon Valley. So it was kind of weird transitioning from that, because like it just became such a passion in that space. I was like, look, as an enterprise technologist, my passion became finding that next bleeding edge company that was going to do better than the next. That determined my success in the space, and being able to transition that to the stock market was actually an easy fit. And it was just like, it was such an easy fit, you know, at a certain point, it didn't make sense to to continue doing what I was doing when I could do it on such a bigger scale out in the market. And at the same time, a lot of my customers were asking like, hey, they would ask me, hey, who should, this company is asking me to recruit me, what do you think, right? Or like, and all that kind of stuff. So having my pulse on what's going on in the market has always been, for as long as I can remember, like what's going on in the, you know, in the enterprise, who's up next, right? Like, and that's always been a passion. I've always had my hands in every little corner of that market. So, just that was my transition. So the topic is pretty near and dear to me, I guess. And you know, from a practical stance, hopefully I don't get too much in the weeds, but you know, that's it's at the core of how I got to where I am and the entire journey along the way.
Do you wish you were part of the enterprise software space post 2020? Like going back from what it used to be back in your day, like how different is now?
So my original crew, like if you know Mozilla, you remember Mozilla, like that. No. You don't?
No. Mozilla, I'm 30 years old, so I might be aging myself.
Oh my God. So the crew, so if you don't know what Mozilla is, the crew that like built Mozilla, like that was like the original like crew that I like kind of, so anyways, it was like before Chrome was Chrome, but that was like disruptive tech back in the day. And like that was before 2020. So I mean, like it's fun, right? Like that's all I can say. There's always been stages of different things. It's just they're their own struggles. But you know, at a certain point, you know, I don't like miss a lot of it either, because at the same time over there it's like, look, I remember my first interview. I was like, what time do people show up? And they're like, I don't, you know, be there sometime between like 7 and 10. And I'm like, what? Like, did not compute. But because like it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. That's the thing, right? And this market has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I do enjoy that, right? So I do enjoy the freedom of having time with family, or at least trying to have the time with family, versus like getting calls in the middle of the night, something's out, or you know, you have you know some fire alarm's going off and you gotta put out, you know, this emergency and that emergency. Those always happen. So it's less of an integrated life, if that makes sense. But you know, in the enterprise, it is a very much integrated life that does not have a beginning or an end. That's for sure.
You probably have such an amazing BS detector on like enterprise companies who like claim they are AI, or like their tech is actually moats compared to
sometimes I have a hard time holding back. I'll just say that.
Cool. I guess we can start with our first theme. So Stock Talk, obviously this is a broad AI theme, but the way I categorize it is three multiple stages. I know you've said something similar where first we say the hardware, then obviously the infrastructure, then the third, which is my favorite part, the application element, where I think this would be the most amount of money made, but nobody knows when that third stage is going to come. So for me personally, I'm front loading it because I never know when that stage is coming. So I want to talk about if you also agree or what those stages are.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think you nailed it on the head there. And you know, I've talked about this at length before, really. And I think different people in the that are theorizing about how this will look going forward have different pathways of how we might get there. But I think when you simplify it, it really is a three-stage process. And, you know, what we've seen over the past really 2 years mostly, and maybe even a little bit longer than that, but I think the public focus really, you know, hyper-focused on this industry post ChatGPT. You know, it was kind of this awakening moment where people started paying attention to the hardware that was being developed and that has been being developed for the last decade in this space. It got a lot more attention, a lot more publicity, deservedly so, after the launch of ChatGPT. But what we saw with NVIDIA, you know, in the last 2 years is this ability to access the top point of the demand in this industry, right? Where the first inklings of hyper demand are going to come from, which is, of course, the chips. And NVIDIA, by virtue of having the best performing AI related chip in the industry by far, and they still do at that time, basically got the top down demand from all the biggest companies in the world, Microsoft, Google, anyone that wanted to build AI was immediately in a rat race to acquire compute. And so that was really stage one. And that's where we saw this explosion in earnings per share for NVIDIA, explosion in revenue, explosion in total demand, right? And so all of those features, really made NVIDIA go on that enormous run that kind of started this entire conversation, and probably one of the main reasons why we're having this conversation today. But when you ask yourself, where does it go next? I think the simple answer to that is it's not done with the hardware yet, mm-hmm. You know? And we've seen that because other competitors have started to perform, right? And my favorite example of that, I think, is Micron, which I've talked about a lot this year. But, you know, Micron is a supplier of high bandwidth memory. And, you know, they've seen the kind of growth they've seen in high bandwidth memory in the fallout of the chip era has been enormous. And that's what led them to have a great guide in Q1, you know, 20% gap up on earnings, and has let that stock perform so well year to date. But, you know, they're not the last player in the stack. You know, And so as that pricing power needle, as I like to call it, moves through the hardware industry, the market will tell you where the supply is getting targeted and where there are shortages of supply, and those companies will benefit a lot. And the second stage, as you referenced,
let's say on the first stage. So I fully agree with you. Like, it's like a game of hot potato on the hardware element of like who has the pricing power. So we saw an NVIDIA, now we're seeing the Micron. Who do you think is the next component? Is it like the network element of like Broadcom, Marvell that might start gaining the pricing power, or is it going to kind of still stay within Micron for a while, like we saw with NVIDIA for one plus year? Or you also mentioned Western Digital might be the next, next one of those names.
There was actually a note this morning out on both Western Digital and Seagate, which I think should be at everyone's top of the list. Not that I'm assuming the pricing power is going there, but from the perspective of if it does go there, then those are potential options. And the biggest thing we've seen from this perspective is this idea that you don't really know what quarter it's going to happen. You know, even the people that were speculating on Micron said this may take 2-3 quarters to progress, right? But now we've seen over time that it happened, relatively quickly. And that may happen for Western Digital next quarter. It may not happen at all. You know, we may not see any shortage of supply there. So that's still very much up for debate. But those are candidates, that could see a quarter or two quarters or three quarters of outperformance because of that pricing power.
So I don't know that it's necessarily like to your question. And I'll try to simplify the infrastructure stack just like as like layman's term as possible. Like if AI was a robot, right? Like the infrastructure stack is like the machinery of the robot. So like memory chips, things like that are components of the machine that go into it. Then your application, if you will, is kind of like the programming for the machine. So like these components that we're talking about, the chips, they're going to go into all the machines. Nobody necessarily knows what program is going to be the staple program for AI like robots in the future. So like that's kind of like you can kind of pick your spots here and there. But I think where Stock Talk's going, when you look at like an NVIDIA and where the market goes, where you look at an NVIDIA, there's no question that no matter what the lead application is moving forward, they're all going to have that one specific component in every single machine, right? They're all going to have that one specific Micron component in every single machine. They're all probably going to also have that one Western Digital component in every single machine or Broadcom component in every single machine to that end, right? So I don't know that it's a single winner, only kind of like, it's not, right? There's not one winner. It's not going to be that way. from an application perspective, there are going to be serious losers. That's what's true, right? But there will be like major, major winners also. But it's not necessarily, single, like one guy takes it all either. But I think at this stage, it's easier for the market to take a land grab on components that will definitively be in every single one of those machines, if you will, it's a stupid analogy, no matter who the winner is. So I think that's where we are in the market, if that makes sense. And then if there is a program or application that comes out that uses a specialized chip, let's say, that phases out NVIDIA, then at that point, there will be a new winner to start to emerge. But we're not there yet, if that makes sense. Let's say Tesla comes out with a new AI program and that only uses a Tesla AI chip. At that point, so NVIDIA will start to lose a lot of market share because they're not going to be compatible with this new AI program from Tesla. So that's, as an example, it's not until that type of pivot happens, and we're not even close to something like that yet.
Yeah, I think when you talk about the hardware space and since that's where we're starting, I think it's also important to talk about competition and this idea that, when we see this pricing power needle move around the industry, there may be a main beneficiary and there also may be peripheral beneficiaries who get the market share, not from your Googles and Microsofts, but from players that maybe can't afford the best product in the industry. There was a lot of talk about the MI3000 chip from NVIDIA that they really, from AMD, misspoke there, the MI3000 from AMD that they released. And people felt, hey, look, maybe this is going to be competitive with NVIDIA's H100. But the problem is, 3 months after that, NVIDIA announced their new chip. And so you have this process where the competitors are forced to innovate, to put out a product to meet the leader, and then the leader just keeps innovating. Mm-hmm. So it's this, it's very hard. I think it's almost impossible to predict how long any of these guys are going to keep the pricing power needle. It's going to depend a lot on, you know, AMD's ability to recruit talent, AMD's ability to innovate much more quickly than they have. I mean, the rate at which competitors are showing up to this race is just too slow right now. And so that's why people have so much confidence in NVIDIA.
That's because a good point.
They are putting out products that are just getting better every year. And so you're trying to catch the previous horse that already finished the race. You know? Yeah.
So like what's true right now is that there's only one player at the table right now. That's actually what's true. Everything else is kind of like their stories, right? Their stories of hoping to get to the table.
Speculation.
The true fact of the matter is that there's only one player at the table, and that's NVIDIA. And until that changes, you're kind of just hoping. So then you're left to speculate on who's next to get there. And yeah, it's NVIDIA or AMD, sorry. And so that's who's next. And you kind of just have to pick your spot, right? Like find out, or maybe there's another competitor that emerges, right? And you're going to have to wait for that type of headline catalyst or that pivot in the market to say, who is there a new application that's going to come out, emerge? Maybe it's an Amazon application or a Google/Meta partnership that's requiring a different chipset, right? Or an Apple application that's requiring an Apple specific chipset, right? That's the type of pivot or fundamental change that will have to change the story. And if and when something like that happens, that's when you'll see, okay, new competitors merged, new player has arrived to the table. But until something like that has happened, there's only one player at the gate.
Well, does AMD even have a chance? Like you guys said, NVIDIA had that first mover advantage, and clearly their tech is superior and had that first mover advantage. But AMD, once they catch up or get to the table, like you said, there's going to be no pricing power because
it's kind of like there. So coming from the enterprise space, I'll tell you, so AMD has always had attempts to get into the enterprise server business, right? But it's owned by Intel. It's just owned by Intel. And the Intel architecture, you can't just like insert a couple AMD servers into Intel architecture in your data center. It's just not going to happen. It's not compatible. So you'd have to rip and replace entire infrastructures or server farms. And it's not as simple as just inputting a couple servers. And so, you know, competitors don't make it easy for you to get a foot in, right? And so what that leaves you with is like, you're left with entering the market with net new builds and customers that are looking to try something different. You're going to have to start at a lower price point, most likely. And it's probably going to be with customers that are also in your same position that are maybe late to the party and are trying to innovate themselves and need to do it on a budget, right? And maybe you get lucky with somebody that catches a home run and is able to outrun, you know, somebody that's top of their game, right? But that's might be what we're looking at. We don't know, right? I think with what NVIDIA is doing, for all I know, they could take over Intel in the CPU business. I'm just going to say that, right? Like there could be no more Intel CPUs. You'd be like NVIDIA CPU, NVIDIA GPU. I would not be surprised if that was our future 10 years from now. You know, I really wouldn't be.
I think to the point of AMD, I mean, look, I don't think the company's dead in the water, but
no.
What we're talking about is really just the GPU component right now, right? Mm-hmm. And NVIDIA has such an enormous lead that at the present, it's hard to imagine anyone competing. And that may be the case for a decade. But AMD does have a couple opportunities, and Paper kind of alluded to this just now, which is, you know, not every buyer in any market is a premium buyer, right? I mean, we've kind of become
one NVIDIA server stock was like 50 grand for a little NVIDIA server, like little, like 50 grand is one little box. If you were trying to buy it, this is 10 years ago.
Aftermarket, they were going for,
yeah.
Yeah. And now aftermarket, they're going for 5-6x that sometimes. So the point is that the concept of a shortage of supply is interesting, right? Because on one side of supply shortages, we say, well, the leader now has more pricing power. But then on the other side of a supply shortage, we say, well, but there's not enough supply, right? Yeah. That's why they have pricing power. So what does that create? It creates a dynamic where you actually do create a space for competitors because your product is priced where it should be priced based on the demand. And so, you know, somebody that can't afford to pay $60K per GPU is going to be like, all right, they're going to knock on AMD's door and be like, well, we want to get into AI. We just can't afford the infrastructure from NVIDIA. So, you know, we'll be clients of yours. Now, are those orders going to be smaller? Yeah, they're not going to be $25 billion orders like they used to be getting from big tech. But the orders will be smaller, but they will be higher volume also. So there is a slot that if AMD can make the second best generation product, they can fit in a higher volume market with consumers that just, not even consumers, but businesses that have less capital to invest. So
SMBs, you're essentially talking about. Like, yeah, if, like SMBs. For example, like the DigitalOcean does cloud computing for SMBs.
Absolutely.
That's like what AMD should go for.
Or even personal compute. Right? Yeah. Or the average everyday person, because in the future, we don't know what these chips are going to look like, but we may get to a point where the average everyday person can build an LLM on their laptop. We may get to that point within 10 years. We probably will.
That's what Apple's basically going to be saying here pretty soon.
Right? Yeah, exactly. They're going to be like, oh, build your own custom LLM with our new CPU. Like, who knows? You know, we may get to that point. But
next month.
Yeah, next month. Yeah. Sorry,
you brought up DigitalOcean, actually, and to this conversation, you know, you're right. No, not most companies aren't going to be able to do that. But I think that takes us to maybe the next layer of infrastructures. Like most companies don't even build on physical hardware today, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Most companies are building on AWS to that end. Right. And I think honestly, that's at the end of the day, I do like Dell, and I don't know if we have time to talk about Dell, but I will, but I really, you know, I've been a fan of Google for the longest time, but the truth of the matter is the overall land grab winner, I'm actually going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be AWS, right? Because AWS probably, they're the ones that are going to be buying these. It's not your, you know, it's not the other companies. It's AWS. And what AWS was doing before I left the enterprise really was they're virtualizing all this GPU, right? If you think of the infrastructure stack and you think of servers, the name server, by the way, comes from like a server serves an application. It serves a purpose, right? And a GPU sits inside of a server. But, you know, there's this virtualization thing became a deal because, you know, when you build a server, it was kind of like you have this excess like process, like excess compute. You have to buy extra and there's extra horsepower that doesn't end up getting used. It has to sit there and doesn't necessarily get used. And so you have to overspend, like you buy a car that has 600 horsepower, you only use 300, but you want that extra 300 just in case you have to hit it like pretty hard sometimes, but you don't ever really use it. That's how these servers builds work. But when AWS comes along and they virtualize everything specifically GPUs at this crazy cost, and they virtualize inference, right? They now have the ability to virtualize your graphic processing and gives you the ability to allocate portions of that to multiple applications.
So would you say that AWS might be the first like precursor of that inflection point towards the application phase of this revolution?
I think that's now. That's happening, right?
It's like, happening, but we're not seeing it in the business spending. And
whether or not the market recognizes that.
But it's not getting reflected in the earnings though yet for AWS.
I mean, it is like, so AWS has always had this issue of like, so they're going to incur the cost, right? Mm-hmm. And what's the last earnings report that they reported, right? It's like 6 months ago. That's what they just reported for. So we're looking at maybe 3 months of this type of AI kind of adoption that's coming through. And in that time, they're having to build all this new infrastructure. They're having to incur those costs. I mean, I'd have to look at it, but I'm telling you that if this is going to happen, you're going to see it, right? And you're going to see it there first and foremost, right? And when AWS came out, the problem with AWS in general and coming from the space, I'll say, you know, most end users were in the situation where they were overpaying. I can't tell you how many million-dollar monthly bills that I took, and we just found that companies were overspending left and right because they didn't know how much they were spending because people would spin up machines and forget to turn them off, and that's just how the platform worked. And they would just let a 50,000 machine run for months and nobody knew it was happening. And AWS was getting that growth as if it was a thing, and then it got shut down, right? And so that's, I think, out of the picture now, pretty much cleaned up. And that's where, but now that's being backfilled with all this AI type of build out and new spend. And I think that's kind of offsetting itself. And Jassy actually mentioned a lot of that recently, right? He mentioned that the shift back to the cloud is on, right? In the last CNBC interview he did, he mentioned that what I'm talking about was called cloud optimization. That's what it's called, right? And cloud optimization was essentially, hey, look, you guys, my bill's way too much. I need you to cut that in half, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what players like Datadog did, right? If you don't know what Datadog did, Datadog is an application that sits on your AWS that tells you where your extra spend is going, right? And it tells you, hey, dude, you have an extra $100,000 over here. Did you know that? Like, you might want to turn that off. And that's what it does, right? So like, it's incredibly valuable for a lot of companies, and very important. And that's what had been happening for years. And I mean, years and years and years. And I think that's finally coming to an end, but also being backfilled with a lot of this AI, right? And so as more applications come up, get spun up, right? And I think a lot of this, like, there's so many applications get spun up. You know, a smaller company isn't going to be buying $100,000, you know, box to run their company. The business setup is AWS, right? It's some rocky whatever. It's Palo Alto Networks. It's like, here's your infrastructure for an SMB. If you want to set up a new company, this is what you do, right? If it's Azure, if it's AWS, it's not usually GCP, but maybe it can be. That's Google Cloud. But so
do you think these like AWS is going to start targeting SMBs because they're caring about volume? Because who knows? No,
AWS has always been there, right? Like, it's always been there.
But they don't care about SMBs as much because it's obviously just clients who, like, 1 million plus in revenue. I mean,
they don't care about the SMBs because it's already theirs. Does that make sense?
I mean, like, I don't think that they're targeting them right now because, I mean, this industry is going to be governed by capital, right? Like, when we first talked about this AI theme on Spaces, when we talked about it a few times, and one of the first things I said was that people shouldn't get excited about the startups in this space because most of them aren't going to be startups for long, you know? And I don't mean that to say like people shouldn't invest in them. What I mean by that is that all of the power is in the hands of the people with the capital to build multi-billion dollar data centers. That's it. That's the whole name of the game now. And, you know, there was a great quote. It was somebody from Perplexity AI, the CEO, wanted to poach a Meta AI researcher. And the first thing he said to him was, do you have 10,000 H100s? And he said, if you don't, I'm not coming. And the guy was we can't possibly afford that.
New currency.
Right.
Why would I bring my talents somewhere where you don't have the infrastructure to do what I want to invent? It's that simple, right? It's like, so this is only further consolidated power with the Mag 7. The Mag 7 have infinite capital. They all do. And by virtue of having infinite capital, they can provide this infrastructure for those players. And so I think SMBs are just the cherry. Like, there's a watermelon of the biggest companies in the world that are nowhere near where they should be on AI, right? I mean, you have accounting firms now, KPMG, which is an example I brought up, spending $2 billion, their biggest investment in company history, an accounting firm, to automate the accounting process. So this has just started. You know, every major business in the world will look to automate as much labor as possible. And to Paper's point about AWS, Amazon's directly interested in silicon. I mean, you guys remember last year, they launched their own in-house chips. I don't know if you guys remember the Tridium. I forgot the names of them.
I mean, they've tried a lot. I remember working with Amazon StockTalk. It was just so funny. It's like, if there was a competitor out there that was so good, it's not like it was the immediate thing was like, I would see immediately, boom, Amazon creates their own instantly.
I mean, they already did.
Datadog, Amazon has their own.
They announced the Tridium 2 chip last year. And they said the reason they designed it was because there's a GPU shortage. So now this hasn't been talked about much since last year.
Whether
this
or not announced it's successful.
In 2023.
Didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Whether or not it's successful, recently? The point is they've directly expressed an interest in acquiring compute because I think the exact quote that was said was by Andy Jassy was, Silicon underpins every single one of our customer workloads. It only makes sense for Amazon to have as much control as possible in this area of innovation. That was the exact quote. I just read that off the article. So he's already told, like, the beautiful thing about Andy Jassy, which he's done so well, is he is willing to show his cards to the industry.
Yeah,
he'll tell you on a shareholder letter years before they even start get the ball rolling. He did this with healthcare. He's done this year with their other new initiatives. He's saying it directly about cost cutting. He basically gives you the game plan and then says, watch me do it.
Yeah.
Then a year later, Amazon is more efficient business than ever. And so, yeah, I think AWS is.
That's always kind of like how they work, right? Play.
Yeah. Going to be a dominant.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and, you know, truth be told, it's like, I've always liked Google because Amazon has been, I worked as a cloud reseller. Right. And, Google was always had like the most potential upside. They were cheaper. They were like equal. Like Azure was amazing too. They were coming up, but AWS was just so good. I was like, they're like bullies, man, because they're so good and they know it. And they would just, like you're saying, like they would just tell you, this is what we're going to do. And they would do it. And they did. Right. But it's just true. Right. It's just what it is. They're that good. Right. And they're that nimble too. They're able to like innovate, move that fast. And like, I mean, so I would say like from that land grab perspective, AWS for sure. And then maybe, you know, there are other people. And then you have, you know, you mentioned DigitalOcean, which is a services provider for AWS services, right? Like for somebody that wants to build on AWS, their company, and maybe isn't as, like in tune to how to use AWS because it's such a complex platform. You have to be very specialized if you really want to be able to utilize it to the best of its ability. You would bring in someone like a DigitalOcean or something like that to help you deploy. So I think there are probably companies like that that would help out utilizing something like a Datadog.
Well, the theme I'm getting from you guys is AI isn't like a rising tide lifts all boats. Like for the listeners right now, like you need to be very careful because they might have a spot in modern AI stack right now, but that's going to soon get thinner and thinner. So for example, DigitalOcean, like you just mentioned, like, do they even have a chance in the cloud computing space?
No. They could be okay. So there are some companies. Can we do New Relic and Datadog for a second?
Beautiful.
So yeah.